talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you in Madison on Devil Radio, 92.7 FM and WTTN 1580 AM. And in Waukesha on the Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits and all points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. We're going right to the front lines of history in the making. There was an historic speech to a joint session of Congress yesterday. The First Lady of Ukraine, Olena Zelenska. You know what I love about Slavic names is he is Zelensky and his wife is Zelenska, or sometimes it'll be Zelenskova, you know, that kind of thing. Very pretty stuff. Anyway, she gave a great speech. She gave it in Ukrainian. There was an interpreter. But let me be blunt, I couldn't go to Ukraine and give a speech in Ukrainian. Neither could you, probably. Maybe some of you could. Well, she made a very, very strong plea for stronger support, stronger weapons for Ukraine. Right now, she went through the atrocities of the savage Russians, the genocidal, sadistic Russians who are killing kids over there. She put up pictures of kids, little four-year-olds, two-year-olds, infants, 10-year-olds, killed in rocket attacks. And she pleaded with the United States for more arms. Germany is slow rolling it. They say they'll send them, and they're holding them up. So is France. They're only giving a little bit. They're afraid of Russia, even though they're in NATO. The United States is the only, the absolutely only country in the world that can save Ukraine. Well, there are a couple of other developments. They have a foreign secretary, a foreign minister named Lavrov. He's very bad news. He's got to be tried as a war criminal himself after this. He has now said that Russia will go beyond the Donbass, back into western and northern Ukraine, eventually to Kyiv. He also said that once Russia occupies an area, if Ukraine attacks it, and that will be considered an attack on Russia, and they can respond to attack with nuclear weapons. They keep saying this stuff. They're a decomposing country. They threaten. They never follow through. It's time to stand up to them even more forcefully. And I was very glad to see that one of our Air Force generals announced that now the U.S. may send jets to Ukraine with pilot training. It's about time, guys. This should have happened back in January, a month before the invasion. It should have happened back in January. Right now, if you send them, by the time they get there, by the time they train them, it takes another month or two. There have to be a lot more Russians killed to drive them out of Ukraine. It was a mistake not to impose a no-fly zone back in January, before February invasion. Biden made the decision, and I can't second guess him, that Germany and France wouldn't go along with it. They're chicken. Germany and France are essentially nothing more than theme parks or museums for ancient history, for medieval history. They're contributing nothing. They are drones. They are providing some arms to Ukraine only because we are pressing them. We've got to get them jets. We should have done it a long time ago. We've got to make it clear. You know, one of the things the Russians and the Chinese will do is shoot their mouth off. They're very good at shooting their mouth off. They got very big mouths. And because we're so much stronger than they are, we tend to be more reserved. I mean, somebody's got to say to them, you're not taking over Ukraine. It is not part of Russia. You are not going to stay there. Stop the bombings and get out. Or we will go in to defend Ukraine. Get out. We're not going to put up a genocide. The Ruskies, the sadistic genocidal Ruskies, say, one of the Ukrainian missiles actually hit a civilian area in Russia. didn't kill anybody, destroyed a road. Better not happen again. And they're killing people every day with missiles. They're launching them into civilian areas. Russia is a decaying, dying culture. It's a culture of fraud, sadism, and genocide. It has been its entire history, modern history, going back to 1,000 years. And I can't say enough good things about Elena Zelenska. It was a great speech. We've given them these HIMARS, these guided missiles, multi-rocket launchers. We've given them eight to drive out the Ruskies. We should give them every one they want. Give them 100. Keep peppering the Ruskies with missiles. Kill as many Ruskies as you can. Kill as many Chechenian terrorists as you can that are in Ukraine and get them out. They are animals. I'll tell you what. We are not doing a good job in ostracizing them from the West. We still let their athletes come in. We let them into the U.S. Open, the tennis tournament. One of the Ruskies just won the women's event at Wimbledon because she said she was from Kazakhstan. Oh, really? Sit her down. Have somebody speak to her in Kazakhstan, the Kazakh language. It's a fraud. You should get out. They say, well, please let our drugged teenage speed skaters into. No, get out. We want no Ruskies, none of them in this country. None of the Nazi Ruskies who are butchering Ukraine, the genocidal Ruskies. I don't want to see them anywhere in the United States. None of them. None of them. There are a handful of people who have stood up. There's people. There are dissidents have been thrown in jail. I have a lot of respect for them. But they are a small minority. That country is diseased. It's decayed. And it's being run by a disease-carrying rat named Vladimir Putin. So listen to the plea of Elena Zelenska. And obviously, her husband, the president, Zelensky, made the same plea earlier. Get them jets. Get them more HIMARS. Have a rain of missiles go down on the Russians everywhere in Ukraine. Everywhere in Ukraine. There's another event today, tonight, the January 6th Commission. January 6th Commission is having a primetime hearing tonight. Be sure to tune in. It's primetime. I'll tell you what. At that hearing, they're going to do a minute-by-minute account and depiction of what Trump was doing as people were being killed in the Capitol. As insurrectionists, egged on by him, went up there and were killed in the Capitol. Some of them. One was trampled to death. One was shot. Many police officers were injured. One had his head crushed. One had an eye poked out. One had a finger ripped off. They were beaten with poles, dragged down the stairs. These are law enforcement. And Trump is twirling. And Donald Trump's junior's girlfriend is dancing. This has got to come out. It's coming out tonight. There are also two lower-level White House aides who are going to testify. And these White House aides are going to talk about why they immediately resigned when they saw that Trump had tweeted that Mike Pence didn't what he was supposed to do, and the rabble were up there trying to kill Mike Pence. So a lot of big things in the news today. Elena Zelenska's speech asking for more aid for Ukraine. It's got to be heated. They used to be the commie Ruskies, now they're the mafia Ruskies, but they've always been the Ruskies. They've always been a country dedicated to fraud, sadism, genocide, murdering people. They want to spread their culture. What culture? Fraud, genocide, and murder is not a culture. That was the culture of the Mongols, Genghis Khan. That was the culture of the Nazis under Hitler. We don't want any more Nazis. We beat the Nazis. And the disease-carrying rat Putin says, oh, well, I helped you beat the Nazis. No, they didn't. No, they didn't. Joseph Stalin, mass murderer in charge of Russia at the time, allied himself with Hitler in 1940 in a mutual non-aggression pact. They were going to divide up Poland and Eastern Europe, murder Poles, murder people in Eastern Europe. Many Jews were killed, 6 million in the Holocaust, largely the responsibility of the Nazis. But I'll tell you what, Joseph Stalin killed a lot of people. And the only reason they ended up on our side is we had to save them because Hitler turned on Stalin and invaded Russia. And then they go, oh, we're on the right side. No, no, you're not on the right side. You're a diseased culture dedicated to murder, fraud, sadism. We don't want you. I mean, the fact is that they're there. There are 140 million people in Russia. You can't just get rid of them all. If you did, it would take the kind of conflagration you don't want. Are they capable of human government? Well, they thought they were. I think Mikhail Gorbachev certainly showed the way. I have a lot of respect for him. And he steered them on the path to democracy. He put in Boris Yeltsin in the 90s. Boris Yeltsin was corrupt. The problem was is when you have 1,000 years you spend as a serf or one of the rabble in a communist state, the minute you're given oxygen of the oxygen of democracy, it goes to your head. You don't know what to do with it. And the thieves move in. And the biggest thief is Putin. He came in, shut down democracy again. He and the oligarchs steal 80% of the wealth of Russia, of the surplus wealth of Russia, the balance of trade wealth. One reason why their military is so bad is he steals 80% of the military budget, and then he undersupplies it or supplies it with fake supplies, or supplies that fail the minute they're used. That's the kind of country they are. And then they say, we're going to go and murder civilians in Europe just because they try to get into NATO and you can't stop us or we'll use nuclear weapons. Well, there's a way to respond to that. No, they're not going to. It'd mean their destruction. But more importantly, they're lying. Everything they have, they stole. The technology, they stole. Very little of it is homegrown. They don't know what they're doing. They know what they're doing. Take a look at Olena Zelenska's speech on YouTube. It's absolutely magnificent. When you look at the January 6th commission, primetime tonight, the hearing, remember that Trump was the guy who told Zelensky, I'm not going to send you any missiles or anything to defend yourself against Russia unless you cook up a fake investigation of Joe Biden over there. Donald Trump stabbed us in the back. Donald Trump has been a Putin clone, actually Putin ally. Actually, he's submissive to Putin because Putin and the oligarchs funded him for a couple of decades. The oligarchs did. And not only that, the Steele report, everybody says, oh, it wasn't proven because they couldn't find the video. Take a look at Trump with Putin. No man bases himself in front of a lesser power the way he did if the guy didn't have something on him. No man. Going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
You can run on for a long time. Run on for a long time. Run on.
Good morning, Captain. Well, good morning to you.
Back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, we have an amazing event, and I had not focused in on this. But there is a candidate for governor in Arizona named Carrie Lake. K-A-R-I Lake. Carrie Lake is a television anchor from the Phoenix area, attractive woman, running as a Republican for governor, and was endorsed by Donald Trump. Ducey, the incumbent, more moderate Republican, opposes her, and he has endorsed someone else. But it's very similar to Maryland. It's possible that she wins because Democrats have been trying to help her, thinking she'd be the weakest candidate on the ticket. I think that is a very dangerous strategy. But we did a little digging in her history, in Carrie Lake's history. And it turns out that she used to be an Obama supporter. In fact, just before the 2017 inauguration of Donald Trump, just before it, here's what she posted on Facebook. Quote, Will you be protesting the inauguration? Which of these suggestions will you adopt? Boycott TV coverage, question mark? Wear black, question mark? Donate to the ACLU, NAACP, or Planned Parenthood, question mark? Unfollow Donald Trump, question mark? Use the hashtag, not my president, end quote. She posted that right before January 2017 inauguration of Donald Trump. And now 5 years later, Donald Trump has endorsed her for governor. How is that possible? The reason it's possible is that there are people in the Republican Party, he's one of them, who will do or say anything. They will do or say anything to get power, to get prestige, to swagger around saying they're the governor or the senator. We saw this with J.D. Vance in Ohio. J.D. Vance wrote a book called Hillbilly Elegy. A lot of people on the left thought that was a great book. He was anti-Trump. He blasted the living daylights out of Trump. There's a guy named Blake Masters running for the Senate in Arizona, endorsed by Trump. And at Stanford University not too long ago, he blasted Trump and he stood for open borders. He just came around, he's a libertarian, open borders. Now Trump has endorsed J.D. Vance, Carrie Lake, who in 2017 said, will you be protesting the inauguration? Will you donate to the ACLU, NAACP, or Planned Parenthood? She's an Obama supporter. Trump's supporting her now, and Blake Masters the same thing. What's going on in the Republican Party? What's going on in the Republican Party, and it's really goes back to a poem by William Butler Yeats, Y-E-A-T-S. You should look him up, read his stuff. It's really good. He got the Nobel Prize for Literature. Irish poet, an Irish patriot, a member of the Irish Senate, as they're trying to break away from Great Britain. And William Butler Yeats has a poem that says, all falls apart, the center will not hold. All falls apart, center will not hold. Well, he was describing the lead up to World War I, and the civilized world fell apart. They started a war. Well, all falls apart, the center will not hold. Again, the only part of the center that's holding on the Republican side is Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, a handful of other congressmen, and maybe Mitt Romney. That's it. That's it. The Carrie Lakes, Blake Masters, J.D. Vances, and many of them, including crooked Lindsey Graham, ratted back and forth so often it makes your head spin, and many, many people. Take Elise Stefanik, the number three in the House. Used to be an anti-Trump moderate Republican. Now she's a Trump slave. They all immediately became Trump slaves because they realized that his endorsement might win them a primary. And when they're a Republican nominee, anything can happen. And Arizona is a Republican state fundamentally. But Carrie Lake, she looks good down there. Ohio is a slightly Republican state, so J.D. Vance figures, okay, I can be a senator. And Elise Stefanik is now the number three in the House leadership, so she's sniffing around. Maybe she'll get a cabinet or VP nomination. These people, you know, the old adage in the 60s, the boomer generation, you sell out, that doesn't begin to capture what they're doing. What they are doing is debasing themselves, making themselves servile to a man and a doctrine that they bitterly opposed, frequently in the harshest language, just a few years ago. So Carrie Lake, she may be the Republican nominee for governor in Arizona, was an Obama supporter and contributor, and posted on Facebook's in early 2017, 5 years ago, quote, before Trump was inaugurated, just before, quote, Will you now be protesting the inauguration? Which of these suggestions will you adopt? Boycott TV coverage? Wear black? Donate to the ACLU, NAACP, or Planned Parenthood? Unfollow Donald Trump? Use the hashtag not my president? Now she claims she's pro-life and opposed to Roe v. Wade and likes the opinion from the Supreme Court. Is she advocating contributing to Planned Parenthood 5 years ago? Now she is against everything the ACLU stands for, and she said donate to them. Now she's racially divisive, a QAnon whack job, and she said tribute to the NAACP. This is the sickness that the fascist Trump cult that has taken over the Republican Party is inflicting on the country. Going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. And you sign Joe Jones, and then you have to put a date, and you put something like January 3rd, 2020. Okay, that's the way it should be. Suppose you put just January 3rd. He's the one circulating the nomination papers. When he leaves the door and realizes you didn't put that down, he can put that 2020 in there because he knows. He witnessed it. It was 2020. And there's a whole column of other people that said 2020. There are more people than you know, and actually not as many as you think, though, that will put down Joe Jones with an address in Ladysmith, and they won't put in the word Wisconsin. The clerks can put in the word Wisconsin. That advice, unanimously by the Wisconsin Elections Commission, has been given ever since 2016. Now, the Legislative Rules Committee, 6-4, suspended that rule. What does that mean? It has no effect right now. It has to be passed by the whole legislature, or at least submitted to the whole legislature. In lame duck, they have a provision that somehow the Rules Committee itself can undertake legislative authority, which I think is unconstitutional. But in any event, let's take a look at the data. How important is this piece of skullduggery that they did? The Legislative Audit Bureau in the last election took a look at 15,000 absentee ballots. That's a lot of ballots. In 29 municipalities, 29. That means big cities, small towns, very representative. 1,022, 7%, were missing part of the witness address. 15 had no address at all. 8 lacked a witness signature. And 3 out of 15,000 had no voter signature. Let me tell you what the clerk did not do. Did not do. The clerk did not accept or fill in a voter signature. The clerk did not accept or fill in a witness signature. The clerk did not or fill in an address where there was none. But how many cases do you think that the clerk did put something in? 66 out of 15,000. 66. That's 0.4%. 0.4%. 66. Because they were ones where they could just put down, say, the word Wisconsin. Because somebody had put Milwaukee, or Green Bay, or Kenosha, or Racine, or Ladysmith, or Jump River, or Mellon, or Hayward, and they're right there. They know the address. That's what the fight is about, and that is what the Republicans are saying is fraud. that clerks corrected 66 signatures. Not signatures, addresses, no signatures. Out of 15,000, 0.4%. And in every case, accurately simply filled in something like the state, where the address and the city were there. And it happens on nomination papers all the time. And that's what the Republicans now are saying is fraud, and therefore there should be, we should throw out the election and Joe Biden shouldn't be president when he won by 20,000 votes and there were millions cast. Fascism creeps in on little cat's feet. The Wisconsin Election Commission unanimously approved this procedure precisely because it would only address a very, very minuscule small number of ballots, and just to correct obvious mistakes like the omission of the state name. That's it. Now the Wisconsin Election Commission is being bypassed, and the Legislative Rules Committee, 6-4, is going, oh no, oh no, fraud, fraud, can't do it. Here's the problem. Just because they suspend the rule doesn't say the clerks can't do it. They can still do it. But they're calling up. There are a couple of thousand of them around the state. You know, there have, you know how many municipalities? I'm not talking cities. I'm talking every little place. And then they have several clerks in each one, and county clerks. They're all calling up. And the Wisconsin Election Commission is going, well, we can't tell you. Use your head. I got news for you. They're all going to continue to do it. In 66 cases out of 15,000, they will fill in the state. They will not fill in an absent signature. They will not fill in an address if there is none. And if it's missing part of a witness address, which is 7% of them, 1,022, they won't correct almost all of them. It will correct 66 of them, 0.4%. And by correct, I simply mean add something like the state name. This is an elaborate fraud dance by the Republican Party. It's an elaborate fraud dance designed to make people falsely think that there's something wrong. There is nothing wrong. There is nothing wrong. Well, we're going to go away. We're going to go away from Wisconsin. The Steve Bannon trial is in mid-course right now. Apparently, the prosecution has rested. It started on Monday. Not a lot to talk about. This shouldn't be a long trial for contempt of Congress. He was subpoenaed, and he said, F you. He gave them a one-finger salute. Didn't show up, didn't give any documents. Said, F you. Okay, so then he gets prosecuted for contempt. It's a possible two-year felony. He can get 2 years in prison. He has two separate counts, so he has two felonies. At the last minute, he did something that he thought was quite sly. At the last minute, he thought he did something that was quite sly. What it was he said, oh, I'll testify right on the eve of trial, try to derail everything. Prosecutor said, no way, Jose. No way, Jose. Made him go to trial. And their lawyers thought that it was quite a sly argument to get up in front of a jury and go, hey, he'll testify. He just said yesterday he'll testify. And he sat down with a big smug look on his face. Well, some lawyers don't think things out. Prosecutor got up and said, now he tells us. Right before the trial, he told us, after the January 6th committee had wasted resources and time and money, having to follow up and do things. And by the way, the subpoena demanded two things. One of them was his testimony. The other one were documents. And he hasn't produced any documents, still today. And he isn't going to produce any documents. So this is nothing more than a scam. I think that if Bannon were really trying to get out of this thing, You know, weeks before the trial, he would have said, I'll testify, and here are five dates. Pick one. And here are 1,000 documents. Then the prosecutor would have to think about it. But you can't come right in on the eve of a trial and go, okay, now I'll cave in. Well, I won't totally cave in. I won't give you any documents. And I'm not going to give you a date certain. So let's negotiate. No way. No way. So what's going to happen to the guy? I think he's going to get convicted. He demanded a jury trial. He's getting one. If he's convicted, he's not going to get 2 years. But a judge could certainly give him time and corrections, 6 months, 3 months, 9 months. I would say give him not just 3 months. Give him 6 or 9 months. Have a felony conviction on him. And then order him to testify. And order him to turn over the document. And if he doesn't do it, then he's in contempt of court. That's what I think is going to happen. I think it'll be something like that. Something like that. The truth is that the commission wants to talk to him. And he should talk to him. But he's going to bluster. He'll take the fifth. Michael Flynn took the fifth. Remember, the general? The general, they asked him, do you believe in the peaceful transition of power under our Constitution? And he goes, I take the fifth. Man, I mean, come on. What do you mean? He takes the fifth on that? This guy will take the fifth. If he was smart, he would have done it a long time ago. Going to a break. The lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. To Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open. 844-967-2789. We go across the pond to one of our closest allies, the UK. They are having a change of prime ministers, and the results that have happened so far, in my judgment, are a problem. Now, there was Boris Johnson. He was the guy. Some of the things he did were quite good. He was very supportive of NATO and the United States and Ukraine, and very supportive of the Ukrainians against the Ruskies. One of the things he did that was not good was he was one of the engineers of Brexit, got the UK out of the EU, and then he decided that he wanted to put a hard border between Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland again, after the Irish Peace Accords in the 90s that had been generated by Bill Clinton and Tony Blair, one of the great prime ministers of the UK, had restored peace to Ireland. There were no more murders, there were open borders. If you've ever been to Ireland, I've been there many times. It's a beautiful country. People are very friendly, very interesting country. But more to the point, it's as if, you know, the Irish Republic could fit in the southern third of Wisconsin. Ireland could fit in the southern third of Wisconsin. It's a very small country. And what the British did 100 years ago was take six counties out of 32, the 32 counties, six counties, and say they're part of Britain, and put a border there, and you needed... Well, I mean, theoretically, you need a passport, you need a, you know, checkpoints to get through. Well, if somebody came in and took six counties in northern Wisconsin and said, we own them now, and you can't go into them unless you get approval, that's basically what had occurred. Well, in the 90s, they got rid of that. When Britain joined the EU and the EU had opened borders, that did it, and then there were no more checkpoints, and people went back and forth. That was essential. It was essential because goods in Ireland go back and forth between the north and south seven times. They're manufactured in one part, they're shipped to the other for refinement, somewhere else for packaging, marketing, blah, blah, blah. Well, now, unfortunately, they've reduced their prime ministers to two possibilities, Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss, the foreign secretary. Rishi Sunak was a financial guy. And the way it works over there is 380 people who are in parliament decide who the two finalists are, and then 188,000 people, 188,000 in the Conservative Party decide which one it is. England has 64 million people. I mean, the UK, 64 million people. What is this? 388 guys say, all right, it's these two. And then 188,000 out of 64 million who are not representative. It would be as if Kevin McCarthy's caucus, the QAnon caucus, picked two people, and then the Republican Party rank and file delegates pick the President of the United States. And one of these people, Liz Truss, is a real problem. She originally was anti-Thatcher. She was anti-Brexit. Suddenly, she's like Carrie Lake of Arizona. She's like J.D. Vance. She's like Blake Masters of Arizona. Suddenly, she's gone full frontal, you know, put another hard border between Northern Ireland and Ireland and attack Europe. This isn't good. This is not what we want. She was anti-Thatcher. Now she wears blouses that look like Thatcher's blouses. We need somebody in there, guys, who gets them back into the EU, okay, and gets rid of fake borders in Ireland and stays away from more trouble in Ireland. We go to the lines. Joe and Madison, my friend. Thanks for calling, Joe. What's in your mind?
I was curious to get your thoughts, Matt, about the possible where the scenario is going for the January 6th committee. I've been reading that some are arguing that what will be stressed tonight is to press a charge onto Trump of dereliction of duty, which, as I understand it, unless you're a military person, does not have a particular criminal element to it, or and as compared to obstruction or fraud, you know, the fraud of the fake electors, the obstruction of the counting of the votes, and it seems to me that those are really key, that obstruction and fraud are, those are criminal charges. That's a criminal thing that our president worked toward, whether he succeeded or not, he worked toward obstructing our vote. So I'm curious to know your thoughts about if what that means kind of politically and in terms of charges, if the January 6th Commission seems to be refining their message to it was a dereliction of duty, which is, you know, reads as a terrible thing when your commander-in-chief is derelict in his duty, but doesn't have a specific criminal charge unless you're part of the military. So I'll take my answer off here, but I'd really like to hear your thoughts about that. Thanks, Matt.
Yeah, Joe, that's an excellent question. Let me get into that. And part of it is legal and part of it's tactical. The legal part of it is that the obstruction and, frankly, lying, the cover-up, and the fraud are criminal offenses. People can understand them. When they hear something like dereliction of duty, they yawn. You know? Yeah, well, the guys in Uvalde, Texas, were derelict in their duty because they were chicken and stood by with 380 officers in the hallway and stood by while 19 little ones and two teachers were murdered and did nothing. That's a dereliction of duty. It's terrible, but most people are just saying fire them. I personally think the January 6th Commission is making a mistake, and it's making a mistake the way the O.J. Simpson trial made a mistake 25 years ago. You can go on too long, too long with something. People's attention strays. There have been so many hearings, and now they're saying there may be more until after the, they may even go after the midterms. And it's all very important to get this out. But Merrick Garland is the one that's going to decide. The recommendation from the committee is not binding, but it's important politically. I'm concerned that Merrick Garland is continuing to dither, that if, God forbid, in November the Republicans win the House, Kevin McCarthy will disband the January 6th Commission the first minute he gets in office. It won't exist anymore. and he'll start investigations. He said he's going to. Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, and Joe Biden. So time is of the essence. It's sort of if you're a prosecutor and you have somebody on murder, burglary, and drunk driving. You don't focus on drunk driving. You don't talk about drunk driving. You focus on murder and burglary. You have to use prosecutorial discretion. Now, this commissioner, not prosecutors, but at some point, lawyers understand that if you bore the jury or confuse the jury with throwing everything but the kitchen sink at them, that then they sit there and the whole thing becomes a little attenuated. But if you go in quick and sharp and direct, no nonsense, here's what he did. He ginned up this insurrection. People were killed. People were hurt. It's obstruction of the duties of the Congress. And what he was trying to do is engineer a coup to state. And people understand that. If you start getting into other peripheral things that are wrong and in a theoretical world could be criminal offenses, but they're not as obvious, I think that's a mistake of prosecutorial discretion. The other thing to keep in mind is this. Merrick Garland does not appear to be aggressive. Merrick Garland appears to be worried about the impact on the country of an indictment of Donald Trump. Fannie Willis of Atlanta is not worried at all, and she's getting death threats. But when you have a non-aggressive attorney general and then a very zealous commission whom I think the world of, I think Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, Raskin, Benny Thompson, these are all great, but they're not prosecutors. Now, Raskin was a prosecutor in a prior age, but they're really not prosecutors now. It is a law school type of professor response. Okay, let's give them everything. Give them the whole load. Bore the hell out of them. Go on for a year with this stuff. And then at what? At some point at the end, you're going to indict somebody? You've lost the audience. You've lost the audience. They want to know, what's this? You go in, boom, boom, boom. Murder, burglary, boom. There's other peccadilloes we're not going to get into. Boom, boom, boom. Now, if you're going to do another hearing in prime time, yeah, what you do is you can go, here's what he did as somebody got trampled to death. Here's what he did while somebody got shot. Here's what he did while this officer's head was crushed. You have the officer with his head crushed going, help me. And Trump is grinning and Donald Trump's girlfriend is dancing. Yeah, okay, that's great. But if you sit around and start getting into details that are much less serious than the others, it's a significant prosecutorial error. They're not prosecutors. And let's be blunt, Joe. Merrick Garland has all the info he needs. He has his own investigation. What are we waiting for? Going to a break. The lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.